Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host, and I have a valuable discussion for you, helping product managers become product masters. As you know from my Product Mastery Roadmap, product masters are the product leaders who have influence throughout an organization to launch awesome products customers love and to build successful product teams. And this is exactly the topic I discuss with my guest. If you don't have the Product Mastery Roadmap yet, get it at the same place where you'll find the show notes for this episode. That is theeverydayinnovator.com/121. My guest is Richard Banfield, who's co-authored an exciting new book for product managers, along with Martin Erickson, the founder of Product Tank, and Nate Walkinshaw, the chief experience officer at Pluralsight. The title of the book is Product Leadership: How Top Product Managers Launch Awesome Products and Build Successful Product Teams. And it's available for pre-order now on Amazon and also at productleadershipbook.com. That's the productleadershipbook.com. The pre-publication version that I was able to read was excellent, and I really look forward to getting the final version when it's released in May. The discussion with Richard will give you a preview and some valuable insights for becoming a product leader. Richard is the CEO of Fresh Tilled Soil, where he leads strategic vision. He's a mentor at Techstars and Blueprint Health. He's also an advisor and lecturer at the Boston Startup School, and he serves on the executive committees of not only TEDx Boston, but also the Ed Club's Edge Conference, and also the Boston Regional Entrepreneurship Week. Whether you're a new product manager or one with 10 or more years of experience, I'm sure you'll enjoy this interview. Hi, Richard. Thanks for joining the Everyday Innovators.
Hi, Chad. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, although we just talked about our weather a little bit before we started recording here, and we're both in gray places today.
Yeah, gray Boston and gray Denver.
So that might change for us soon. We'll see if we get some snow out of this too, which isn't a bad thing for probably either one of us. You have this book that you are getting out to the market here soon that I'm really excited to be talking about with you. It's called Product Leadership: How Top Product Managers Launch Awesome Products and Build Successful Teams. And one thing that struck me about this was, you know, that title, and then as I skimmed through the pre-version that you gave me, it strikes a contrast between product managers and product leaders. And I thought that might be a good place for us to talk. Can you describe that difference?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of this industry is made up of product managers, but most of those people don't really think about themselves as leaders. The reason why we were curious about that distinction, and probably the curiosity that drove the book itself, was as product managers become more influential in delivering value to the customer, their role becomes more of a leadership role. So, as we said in the book, you can be a pretty good manager and not be a leader, but it's very difficult to be a good leader and not also have good management skills. And I think that it's not that those two things, you have to be both of those two things, you know, those things at the same time, but rather in order to deliver value to your team, to the company, and ultimately to the customer, there needs to be some kind of understanding of what it means to have a leadership role. Mm-hmm. And guide and drive and direct your team towards delivering that value. So that's where the curiosity that started the inquisition, I don't know if that's the right word, the investigation into these topics. And that's what led us down that road. And it's been a very fascinating journey, because I think that we're in a transition between, you know, what does it mean to be a good manager and what does it mean to be a good leader? And are those things mutually exclusive and can they be the same? And we explore a lot of that in the book.
Good. There's a backdrop here that I have called the Product Mastery Roadmap. And it's just a recognition of kind of how do you go from being the average product manager, you know, to taking some purposeful action to really becoming a leader in the organization. And part of that means that you can become, you know, any type of leader that you wish to be at any level, because product managers have this, and it's reflected in your book and just what you said, some, we have this unique role inside organizations that we see the organization differently than almost anyone else does. And it gives us more of a holistic integrated perspective, and we're focused on delivering value to customers. And it's a kind of a natural path to move into leadership if we're paying attention to what's going on.
Right. And leadership has two distinct things. One is the style of leadership. So you can be a leader and have a very different style than what's traditionally considered as a leadership thing. So it doesn't have to be authoritarian at all. You can be very quiet and passive in your leadership abilities. So there's style. It's one consideration. And then the other part of leadership is what exactly are you connecting with your leadership? Are you connecting the vision to the team roles? Are you allowing yourself to influence the progress of the organization or the progress of the product itself? So what's the path that leadership follows? And that can be very different for very different mm-hmm. people. You don't have to be managing people. You don't have to be the boss. You can actually be a leader and have a very individual role or a contribution that's not as part of a the typical managing person, other people role. Mm-hmm. And I think we mentioned one particular person that comes to mind is Matt Assay from Adobe. He is a very influential person in Adobe's organization. You know, he has a VP status. He guides the organization towards product leadership, but he doesn't have a team. He's not managing human beings. He's just influencing them. So that's a possibility for leaders, that you don't have to be a team leader or a boss of people to be a leader.
An aspect of that, I think, is as product managers, we need that leadership capability in the sense of being able to influence others that, as you shared in that example, we don't have any actual authority over, but that we're working together with product teams and with, you know, cross-functional members pulling in from other aspects of the organization to accomplish the work of creating a product and delivering value to customers. And knowing how to just generate that influence is key to our success in product management.
Yeah, and that's true of any organization. It doesn't have to be a product organization. You know, I've just I was in the military, and I recently read a book called Extreme Ownership about SEAL teams and how they operate. And it's exactly the same. It was funny. I was reading this book, and I'm thinking, wow, these guys could have written this book as if they were product leaders. It's the same ideas, same delivery of those ideas to your teams and to your organization that makes you a leader. It's not specific to product. It's about time somebody wrote a book about product leadership, because we do see ourselves as being unique, and we do see ourselves as being in that position where we can influence the overall organization because of our position. And I think it's now time that we can put those into words and take these anecdotes that we've gathered from all these people and allow product managers and leaders to see themselves as true leaders, not just as being part of the product organization, but being leaders within the overall organization.
Yeah, I do think it's an important book for sure. There are lots of leadership books, but there's not one out for our field yet. And this will be a really important addition. And you said something about the anecdotes from people. So let's talk about how this came about, right? How did the book come into existence? It sounds like you must have been talking with lots of people and getting some experiences here.
Yeah, I hinted at, the book is almost entirely written from the point of curiosity. Myself and my co-authors, we have our own experiences, and we definitely have a lot of experience. If you combine all our experiences, it's probably, you know, a good 40 or 50 years of product experience. My company alone has worked on 700 products. So think about that. That's a lot of knowledge that you gain. But at the same time, the thing that kept me awake at night was, is this just my perspective? Am I living in my own little bubble? Do I have a whole bunch of cognitive biases that I've developed in my world that are denying me the opportunity to learn more or see more? And I started the process of asking those questions to other people. So I'd go to folks who are running their own product organizations and say, you know, how do you see these things? What do you see when you're in these situations? And that's really just how those conversations ultimately led to a book. Is Martin is a co-author and is one of the people I asked that question to.
And just for listeners, that's Martin Erickson with the founder of Product Tank and Mind the Product blog, right?
Right.
Okay.
And Martin and I realized we had a lot of the same questions, and that's ultimately where it started. And then Nate Walkinshaw, who's the CXO of Pluralsight, was somebody we both knew, and we said, look, he's one of the smartest people we know in this space. We should include him as well. And it just made sense that you know, our questions were aligned with what ultimately became the questions of the industry. This book is really a reflection of what the industry is asking right now. If you go to a conference, if you go to a product tank meeting or a meetup, these are the questions that people are asking. They are saying, you know, what is leadership? What is management? How is that influential? Do we have any authority? Where does that authority lie? How do we hire a team? How do we manage that team? So we're just reflecting what the industry is doing. We're not claiming to be the experts. We're claiming that what we are able to do is speak to the experts and then put that into a book.
Clearly, the three of you have lots of deep expertise in products, and so you provide a rich foundation to draw from, and then you've curated this knowledge from your experiences with others too. So that's pretty solid for us. I'm looking forward to the final version of this book for sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what it becomes a great leader. What did you find from these questions in terms of, okay, how is it someone becomes a great product leader?
I think the process of becoming a leader is probably going to be different for everybody. But there are some patterns that look very, very similar across all those different leaders. So regardless of how you got to your leadership position and out of what let's say which path or track you took to get there, because they're always different, right? We've got product leaders who came out of engineering, out of marketing, out of even finance. We've got some really weird backgrounds, design that are feeding into the product leadership category. But once you get there and you start to look at the patterns that make those people the same, or what's similar across those things, you start to see things that are similar. And those things are, they're team players, right? They play well with others. They're good with human beings. They're not just good engineers or designers or marketers. They understand what it means to work with other humans. They're looking to get the best out of other people. And if we can say one thing about the book, that's the theme that comes out of it. How do you get the best out of other human beings? How do you get the best out of your team? And that means that you've got to be a lifelong learner, right? You've got to be willing to get your hands dirty. You've got to be willing to face the fact that this is challenging work. Mm-hmm. We use the term embrace the suck. There are moments at which it is undeniable that you are going to have a challenging time trying to get your product to market or solve a problem or develop that feature or engage with customers in a way that actually gets you the knowledge that you want. That stuff is hard. You've got to be willing to do that. If you're not willing to embrace that part of the work, you're probably not going to last very long in the industry even, because so it is.
Are you telling listeners that product management, getting products to market, isn't just all roses and lollipops and no?
Unicorns and rainbows.
I like that phrase, embrace the suck. There are moments where it just sucks.
Yeah. One of the people that was helping us with the copy editing of the book was going through the book and sent me a text halfway through the edits and said, oh my God, is this the worst job in the world? These people get absolutely no recognition and authority, and they get all the responsibility to do the work. So yeah, I don't want it to sound like it's all bad news, but there certainly is a lot of challenging aspects to the work, and leaders tend to embrace that. They look forward to that. They're excited about learning new things, about getting their hands dirty, about the challenge ahead of them, and working with a team to solve those problems. So they are interested in not just saying, look, I'm the smartest person on the team, or I'm the smartest person in this organization, but saying, we as an organization need to work together to solve these problems. How does that happen? Mm-hmm. So they're acting and thinking team first. What's good for the team? What's going to make us all successful? And then depending on the stage of the organization, they're going to have to be comfortable wearing different hats. So if you're an early stage product leader, you're going to have to wear a lot of hats. You may have to be the engineer, the designer, the marketer. God, you could even be the CEO. I mean, there are a lot of roles that you may need to take on early on. And then as the organization evolves, that may become more specialized. Mm-hmm. But you're also going to have, regardless of the size of the organization, empathy for the other roles. So wearing those hats sometimes means you're actually doing that work, but it also sometimes means understanding what your team members are doing and having empathy for the work, what it means to engineer something, what it means to market something. That helps you become a better leader because you're then speaking the language of your team. Other things are just typical of good leaders. These are not specific to product managers or product leaders, but having a curiosity about what's coming down the pipe, understanding what your customer wants, curious about what they care about, being able to communicate that stuff, writing skills, presenting skills, conflict management skills, facilitation skills. I think we probably have a bigger issue right now where those things, like those communication skills and curiosity, are considered as soft skills. But they're also the hardest things to do. So I don't know why we call them soft skills, because they're the hard things, man. They really are hard to do.
Exactly. And arguably the most important things when it comes to leadership.
Right. And then you've also got things like, because of the nature of the product leadership role or the product management role, because where you sit in the organization, you have to manage both up, down, laterally, outside of the organization when you're talking to vendors and partners. So then there's the negotiation skills and the selling skills, the ability to be able to get people to see things when it's not that obvious, the ability to translate very high-level stuff like the vision statements down to what are we going to do today? So make that granular. Again, soft-ish skills, but very difficult skills to master, and things that you're probably never done with. You're also going to be good at just managing time. It's a role that requires being pulled in a lot of different directions. So you've got to know how to go deep, go shallow, and everything in between that, and make time for those things to happen. And then I think one of the most important things is this is again, I'm going to reference the book Extreme Ownership, which is the SEAL team book, just because it's on my mind right now, but grace under fire. You know, you don't want to be an emotional wreck every time something bad happens, every time you get bad feedback from a customer, every time a bug happens. You need to be controlling all of that stuff. So I think we're looking, at least when we were interviewing people, we were looking at people that that had both these hard skills. They understood what it required in order to deliver product, but they were also really good soft skills people. They knew how to manage themselves and teams, human beings, whether they were managing those people directly or just connected to them through the organization in ways that was going to deliver value. So, you know, that's what we're seeing. That's, I don't know how you become that. I think that's a combination of being open to the fact that you have to learn these skills. If you're fortunate enough to have been born with them, great. But that makes you the 1%. The rest of us, the other 99% of us, have to work on those things. And we're probably never done either. We're working on them all the time.
You know, I've taught leadership courses at some universities. And this question typically comes up, right? How do I really become a leader? You know, and there's the debate between, are you born a leader or are you nurtured as a leader? And fundamentally, you know, my response is you need experience, right? You become a leader through experiences. You know, you can't just read a book and wake up one day and be a leader or, you know, like you said, 1% who might be born naturally have some tendencies. But it's through those experiences that you find your leadership role and certainly are hopefully learning along the way and some soft skills and hard skills, you know, in the process too. And I think a lot of leadership comes through embracing the suck. You know, it's those moments where you have to, as you said, manage yourself so that you're acting in a way that's still influencing others and getting people to move in the right direction that you need them to move without becoming unraveled yourself.
Right. And you see this a lot in sport, in professional athleticism. Getting to the final goal, what if that's an Olympic medal or you know, breaking a personal record or a world record, there's not a lot of easy stuff that happens in between starting that process and ending that process. Sure, the end is rewarding. The end is fantastic. But in between, there's a lot of sucking.
Right.
And, you know, being in the pool for 6 hours a day or running for 3 or 4 hours a day or whatever the case may be, there's nothing particularly nice about that. there might be some moments when you're saying, well, I'd rather be doing this than something else. But the truth is, that's sucky. And that's the same in product leadership, is that not every day is good. Not every day is going to be fun. But it's okay, because the reward of delivering value to the customer is amazing. I mean, that is a truly rewarding experience. When you see them light up and enjoy your product and get the things that they need out of it, that's what makes us do this.
That's it. That's what draws in product managers, is that ability to create something new that creates value for someone else.
Yeah.
And that's why for most of us, I think why the field is so rewarding. There are some certainly tangible tools for us to get our hands on, you know, just throw one out, like Maslow gave us his hierarchy of needs, right? And he has had this pyramid, mm-hmm. the triangle of how we develop and how we can motivate others. Like one there that stands out is the social level, which is kind of midway up on the hierarchy. And a lot of people look at that and say, well, as a leader, you know, I need to have pizza parties for my product team and, you know, be socially engaged with them and go, you know, hang out at the pub after work or something. And they miss that the core focus there really is the social level is talking about, we want to be a part of something that's important, and we want to understand how our role relates to this important project.
Right.
Which is an aspect of creating vision, right?
Right.
And good leaders have to be creating a vision for their product and letting people know their contributions to get on board, what that means to be part of that vision.
Yeah, and it can take a lot of different forms. I think it's become popularized that foosball and beer after work and all that kind of stuff is the way that you create culture around an idea or a vision. But it's different for every organization. That might mm-hmm. work well for you. It certainly doesn't work well for my company. That's not the culture. We have a lot of people in our organization who have young kids. Staying after work and drinking beer just doesn't work. It's not practical.
Right.
So we need to find other ways to build a relationship with each other. And that sometimes isn't going to be the coolest, sexiest thing. You know, we're not going to be sliding down a slide that's built from the second floor to the first floor. It's just not what we're capable of, or it's not part of our practical environment. But we can do other things. And like you said, it's the relationship building that's really important. And it's the relationship building that's aligned with the vision that's really critical. And that's what great leaders see. They see a path between what that vision might be, what that imaginary future is, and how to get there that's relevant to the people involved. Because if you're trying to sell a culture that's not relevant to the people, you'll just lose those people. But it has to be aligned. So it's about finding the right folks. And I know this is kind of somewhat controversial about, you know, getting the right people on the bus and the right people off the bus, the Jim Collins stuff. It's a fairly good metaphor, even if it's slightly flawed. You do have to know where that bus is going, first of all, before you start getting the people on the bus. Because if you get a whole bunch of people on the bus and then you say, hey, by the way, we're off to Denver, and everybody goes, we're hoping for Florida, you're not going to get the same kind of response. So, yes, I absolutely agree. Getting the right people on the bus is important, but not until you've figured out where you're going, because that'll help you decide who's going to come along for the ride.
Right.
And it'll also make it a lot easier for people to align their personal goals with the organizational goals, because that's critical as well. If there's a lot of interference between personal or incongruence, I should say, between personal and professional goals, eventually those people will wear out and they won't stick around long enough for them to actually deliver any value to the team.
Sure. We want to go someplace exciting that is meaningful to us, and ideally do it with people we enjoy working with. Right.
Right.
It's that combination. Good.
Yeah.
There was a checklist I saw in the preview copy of the book you sent me that talked about, you know, what's involved in becoming a great leader. So you went through kind of several characteristics there.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things I saw on the checklist that I thought were interesting also. Do you want to just pull out some of those that are interesting to you and talk about?
Yeah. Well, why don't you Why don't you tell me which ones you found the most interesting, and then we can talk about them.
Well, one we just hit a little bit, which was leaders articulate a clear vision and a path for getting there.
Yeah.
Right. So that one stands out, and making sure that
let's talk about that for a second. Okay. I think that's a really, really hard thing to do. It sounds easy, but it's actually really difficult. Mm-hmm. Ideally, what you want in a commercial organization, in a product organization that's commercially motivated, there will be a lot of visioning skills at the CEO level. So the CEO should be able to do that very well. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not always the case, because sometimes a founding CEO is a technical CEO and they started a business and then, you know, they found out that, hey, look, I'm really good at this, but I'm not good at managing the company, and then I'll bring in a business leader. But let's assume for a moment that the CEO has the ability to take an idea, a concept, and translate that into a vision that can be very clearly delivered to the rest of the company and to whomever else is involved, the stakeholders, customers, investors, etc. The biggest problem with that we see and that we have bumped into in our interviews is it's difficult to make that stuff simple. Hmm. Simple is hard. So taking an idea, taking a concept, and turning it into a simple one line or one paragraph or image that people can digest is important. It has to be done, but it's also very hard. And I think product leaders are finding themselves involved in that conversation more and more. It used to just be that the CEO would do that. But now we see product organizations orientating their vision around the product or products or line of products. And so the product leaders are being leaned on to come up with ways to describe that value. The CEO might come to the product leader and say, you know our customers, you've spoken to them, you know our product. How do we describe this value to the rest of the world? So I think that the product leader is finding that more and more they're getting involved in the conversation or being expected to participate in that conversation. So visioning skills, being able to simplify complicated ideas, is a requirement of the job. It may not be a requirement every day, but it is certainly something that's going to come up in conversation from time to time. And turning those complex things into simple ideas isn't the easiest thing in the world. It does take practice, and the more you do it, the easier it becomes. But it's something that we should be working on, something as product managers and leaders we need to be thinking about.
We are getting involved in more discussions like that. And from U.S. history, one of my favorite examples is we're going to the moon, right? This exceptionally complicated project that people rallied around, that we're going to the moon, and that was the job.
Yeah. So, and one of the examples I use in the book is simplicity can actually be turned into complexity by the leadership accidentally. Mm-hmm. So when Walt Disney started his organization, the vision there was quite simple. It was make people happy. Didn't say how. And if you think about the evolution of the organization, it didn't really matter how. It started with some visual things. They started making full-length animation. They went to theme parks. It's now a huge amount of delivery mechanisms. I mean, you can think about every kind of mechanism, how you deliver entertainment. Disney's involved in it. Mm-hmm. Making people happy was a really, really good vision because it was timeless. It didn't require any description of what technology was. If you go to the Disney website now and you look at their vision, it's a disaster. It's like borderline fascism. It's like telling people how to think about how they're going to be entertained. And it's 300 or 400 words now. It's awful. You couldn't remember it if I paid you. So it's possible you can go in the opposite direction. You can go, ideally, most organizations would be going towards simplicity, but in some cases, they can go the opposite direction. And that's where the product leader needs to be involved and say, look, you're not just talking to investors here. You're not just talking to the stockbroker that's trading the share. You need to be talking to the people that are at the theme park that don't really want to read 400 words. They just want to be happy or whatever the thing is that you're trying to do.
Right, and cut through all that. And the ones that are able to cut through the noise with a very simple message are the ones that stand out.
Exactly.
There were a couple others on the list. Two that might be kind of related to talk about was Leaders create a process that delivers the best results.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also talk about not getting bogged down in the tools.
Yeah. So process is, I wouldn't say it's a pet peeve, but it's a big concern of mine. I love process. I'm actually a biologist by training. I like the idea of the scientific method where you think about the idea, the hypothesis, the problem you want to solve, and then you work through a series of validations to get to a point where you can either turn it into something useful or deny it and say, look, it didn't work out. We're going to go back to the beginning again. So I enjoy process. But what I've seen too often, especially over the last, say, 15 years, is process becoming dogma.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this starting with things like Six Sigma, Waterfall, Agile, Scrum. They all fall into the bucket of becoming dogma.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't intended on being dogma. They were intended on being a framework, a way to provide scaffolding for thinking. But because we're so desperate for structure, we can turn those things into dogma. And they can actually start to manage us in a way that prevents creativity, which prevents opportunity. And we're so busy trying to, you know, get things off our burn down chart or put things in Jira that we forget that there are actually creative ways to solve these problems that don't fall into that process. So I'd like to suggest that we go back to a framework mentality where we think about work style more than we think about process. And Nate Walkinshaw talks about this all the time. Process is definitely important, but not at the risk of denying us good work style,
mm-hmm.
good framework thinking. So I'll leave process there because, you know, we could spend the entire podcast just talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools are connected to that. So tools should always be amplifiers of our success. We shouldn't be using tools to fix deficiencies in how we work as teams or deficiencies in our work styles. They should be there to amplify. So where we see an opportunity to be better at what we're already doing well, that's when the tool comes in. That's when we can say, is this a 10x thing that this tool can help us with? We're already doing this thing well, let's amplify it. If you've got a problem, a tool's not going to solve the problem. Right? You know, and the most famous version of this is CRMs. If you are not speaking to your customers, there is no CRM in the world that's going to fix that problem. I guarantee you. In fact, it might even make it worse, and very often it does.
Mm-hmm.
So just like those situations we see with common tools, the same is true with product management tools. We should only be adopting the tool that amplifies what we're really good at, what our strengths are, versus using tools to try and fix something that we're really bad at already.
And those two are closely linked because often we bring in a tool with the purpose of getting a new process.
Right.
And I think that's the worst combination where we're adopting a tool we don't understand. It's imposing a process on us that we don't understand and probably one that doesn't fit with where we're actually are in terms of our own maturity for what we're doing.
Yeah, hospitals are a really good example of this. They most modern hospitals have some massive management tool like an Epic or something like that. It takes months and months of training to even learn how to use these damn things. And they don't solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually make healthcare easier. It doesn't make the job of the caretaker better. And that's where we are right now in the evolution of product. And we need to get beyond that. I'm not saying that it'll always be like that. I don't think that things like Epic will be our future. I think that's just currently where we are. We're going through this evolution of product. That's what we currently can do because it's a complex thing. But we need to get better. We need to find simpler, better, faster solutions that don't require people to learn new behaviors just to use the tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that. You walk into a hospital. You know, my dad had a bike accident recently, and he was in the ER.
Hmm.
And the caretakers spend more time staring at the screen than they do looking at the patient. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. I don't even need to be a healthcare professional to tell you that that's a mistake.
We have put our energies in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So thanks for walking through some of those aspects of product leadership with us. And there's many more we could dive into, but we're going to have to leave them for listeners to find in your book. And I will tell them about how to do that in a moment. But also, listeners know I love innovation quotes, and I always ask guests for one. I think you have a slightly different take on my request, so I'm interested to hear this.
Not to be too controversial, we work with a lot of companies that do innovation or have innovation groups within their organizations. And I think we would probably agree that the point around innovation is the opposite on the end of the scale of incremental improvement, right? Incremental improvement is making small changes throughout your day or your product so that you can get those things fixed and improved on. But innovation is where you want to climb the big mountain. You want to do something new. You want to change the market sector that you're entering or launch a new product. And what we see very often is organizations approaching this as if they're just going to make a very small version of what ultimately will be the big solution. And the metaphor or the analog for this is baking a cake. So assume that baking the cake is the innovation. Mm-hmm. That's the finished product of the innovation. What most organizations do is they just bake a very small cake. So they'll make a cupcake. The problem with that is making a small version of a big cake requires exactly the same amount of infrastructure and effort and team. You just need the same chef skills. You need the same ingredients. You need the same tools like the oven and the various other bits and pieces you need to actually make that cupcake. It's just a very small version mm-hmm. of the big thing. So the amount of effort that goes into creating that innovation doesn't necessarily mean that the innovation is going to be validated before you've spent all that time and effort. So what you're really trying to do is validate your idea before you go to market, before you build the big cake, before you need all the tools, before you need the chefs to do that thing. So the metaphor that I much prefer is, let's say the problem is moving somebody from A to B. What you want to do is not build a car or tool a factory that builds cars to get somebody from A to B before you validated your idea. Build something very simple. What gets them from A to B? Well, it turns out that a skateboard does a perfectly good job of that. And you can build a skateboard with almost no tools and very, very low level skills. Mm-hmm. If that works, if you validated that idea and that gets that person from A to B and that solves that solution, then you can start to upgrade to bicycle, to motorbike, to small car, to truck, whatever you need to do. But those are the steps, the step functions that allow you to get to what ultimately is the innovation that solves the problem without having to spend all that time and effort building an entire factory to find out, oh, we built the wrong car. This doesn't actually solve the problem. And then you're screwed. And that's what happens with so many innovation organizations is we're working with a big bank, no names mentioned, but they have these huge, big projects, these budgets, like $5 to $15 million budgets to solve a problem. And we went in there and we solved a problem for $100,000. Well, why is everybody not doing that? Well, it's because that's the way we think we need to be. We think we need to be baking cupcakes so that we can deliver cakes. We don't.
Right.
It's the wrong way to do things. So it's not a quote, and I'm sorry. I don't even remember who came up with this idea. I know that there's a Medium article that suggests this thing somewhere along the line. So maybe you'll find it on Medium, but yeah.
It's a good innovation story. So, you know, the context of a plan. I think I will, for the show notes, pull out a quote, which I liked, and attribute it to you, and then I'll share the story. And that quote you said was, validate your idea before building the big cake.
Ah, there you go.
Encompasses the story well. So I appreciate you sharing that. So thanks for talking through a little bit about product leadership with us and some of the characteristics and ways of becoming a product leader and reminding us of that, taking innovation in small steps and validating along the way, which is what we really need to be doing. And what do you want to leave listeners with? Certainly want to know how to get your, for listeners, how to get their hands on your book, if they want to check that out. And also anything else you'd like to share?
The book can be pre-ordered now. If you go to productleadershipbook.com, you can either order it from Amazon or from O'Reilly. I can guarantee you, you're not making us rich. We get literally nothing out of this book. So the only thing that you're doing is adding value to your life. My company is freshtilledsoil.com or freshtilledsoil at freshtilledsoil.com. And we're a product design, product innovation company. So if you've got questions about that, I can be reached at richard@firstyoursoul.com, or you can read our blog posts, and I've got a bunch of stuff on Medium. If you just look for Richard Banfield, there's a ton of cool things on Medium. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about it. Like I said, most of my writing is done out of curiosity, so I don't profess to be an expert, and I love hearing alternate points of view and perspectives, and maybe that'll lead to another book. Please keep on writing and reaching out.
There's always more curiosity to take us down other paths, isn't there?
It's a bottomless pit.
Tell us about Fresh Till Soil just for a moment, because you mentioned you have 700 products under your belt and growing. What is your product space? What kind of products do you get involved with?
So we're a digital product company. So we only do digital product, although that can find various forms. Sometimes that reaches well beyond just the screen. And we've done work for airports where we've created entire environments and experiences for them. But we've been around for 12 years now. Always been in the digital product space. And although we've done a lot of website work, a lot of the work is apps and products, a lot of B2B stuff. Worked with everybody from Intel and GE all the way through to some startup you've never heard of. And they're great. We love working with the startups. We also love working with the forward-thinking big Fortune 500 companies. We're a team of 30 people. Most of us are in and around the Boston area, although we're somewhat distributed. And we build stuff for other people. We make other people look like heroes. Those are not our products, although we do have a couple of our own. We're essentially an agency or a firm or a studio, depending on how you define us. We're there to make other people successful. We put the cape around their neck and make them look like superheroes, and then we disappear into the background quietly.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that. Sounds like a interesting work to be part of for sure.
Yeah.
And leave us with the URL again for finding the book.
Productleadershipbook.com.
Great. Richard, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks for listening. Please tell other product managers and innovators about this podcast. I make that easy. Just go to the show notes for the summary of the discussion with Richard, and you'll find links at the top of the page to share it on your favorite social media site. Also, from the same page, you can download the Product Mastery Roadmap. That and more is at theeverydayinnovator.com/121. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.